Mr. Chairman and friends. Some of you, whether you've already seen the posters for these talks or whether you've just heard the chairman's announcement of the title of the talk this evening, some of you might be thinking that the title of tonight's talk has a rather familiar ring, being all things to all men. It's as though one has heard it before. You might even be wondering which particular text, which particular Buddhist text, which particular sutra, this expression, this phrase, being all things to all men, comes from. Well, I'm sorry in a way to have to inform you that it doesn't come from a sutra at all. I must confess it comes from the Bible. In fact, it comes from the New Testament. If we turn, as I trust we rarely do, to the New Testament, as I trust we rarely have needs to do, except when perhaps preparing talks, we find that the Apostle Paul, of whom some of you might have heard, is writing to some people called the Corinthians. And these Corinthians, in case you're not quite sure, these Corinthians were the Christians of the city of Corinth. It seems, reading between the lines, so to speak, that Paul, the Apostle Paul, had been having a certain amount of trouble with some of these Christians, some of these Corinthians, these Christians in the city of Corinth. And it seems as though he's, in a way, defending himself in the course of this letter, this epistle, as it's usually called, defending himself against some charge or other. So in the course of his defense, so to speak, he says, by way of justification, it seems, that he has made himself every man's servant in order to win over as many people as possible. In order to win over the Jews, he has become like a Jew. In order to win over the Gentiles, that is to say the non-Jews, the heathen, he has become like a Gentile. In short, he says, he has become all things to all men, that haply some might be saved. Now, you may be wondering why I've used a quotation from the Bible, a quotation from the New Testament, from this letter of Paul, as the heading of a talk on a theme from a Mahayana Buddhist scripture. Well, you could say that I've done it as an upaya kaushalya, as a skillful means. After all, some people like the sound of these old biblical, especially authorized version, Jacobean, post-Shakespearean phrases, even without knowing, perhaps, always exactly where they do come from. After all, they have become, for better or for worse, a part of our English language. So it might be that some people at least might be all the more inclined to come along to hear a talk with this sort of title, with this sort of familiar ring to the title. And moreover, of course, the theme of tonight's talk is, in fact, upaya kaushalya, or skillful means, so that in a way it seemed quite appropriate to give as a title to this talk, or rather to give this talk a title, which was in a way itself a sort of skillful means, at least so far as some people are concerned. So the theme tonight, which has been indicated by this title, comes of course from the Vimalakirti Nirdesha, or teaching of Vimalakirti. As we saw not only last week, but also the week before, the Vimalakirti Nirdesa is a Mahayana scripture. It's based on oral tradition coming down from the time of the Buddha. It teaches the Bodhisattva ideal. That is to say, it teaches the ideal of attaining supreme perfect enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. Last week, our theme was taken from the first chapter of the Vimalakirti Nirdesha. Last week, you may recollect, those of you who were here, the scene was laid in Amrapali's garden, or Amrapali's park, on the outskirts of the city of Vaishali in northeastern India, some 2,500 years ago. And you may remember that on that occasion, so to speak, we met the Buddha, we met Ratnakara, the Bodhisattva, as well as some 500 Lishavi youths, as well as Arahats, Bodhisattvas, and so on, all of whom made up the great assembly listening to the Buddha.